This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Immigration continues to be a heavily debated topic across the country. Much of the attention has been focused on the U.S.-Mexico border, from the large number of people traveling from Central and South America to seek asylum, to a controversial family separation policy enforced by the Trump administration in 2018. The Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration in La Crosse have sent two different groups to the southern border. Joining us to talk about their visit and why the immigration debate matters for communities in the Coulee region are Pat Ruda, Justice Coordinator for the FSPA, Sister Mary Arnaldison from FSPA's Sister Services Department, Vicki Kendall, FSPA's Director of Housekeeping, and Arlette Rodriguez-Miller, Executive Director of the Greater La Crosse Area Diversity Council and Chair of the Coulee Region Immigration Task Force. Pat, why did the FSPA want to travel to the southern border?
Well, I think first and foremost, they really wanted to be of service. And the sisters have a rich tradition in migration and immigration issues. Many of them have served across the world globally. And so this particular concern, especially at our U.S. border, southern border, brings, I guess, all of us to the forefront to really care about our brothers and sisters from those other countries who are migrating here to the U.S. So I think mostly it was to be of service and then also to really learn more about what's really going on at the border and then bring that information back to our congregation, the sisters' community, and then and also our regional area here. So.
That's interesting that you said kind of bring information, discover information, and bring that back. You know, immigration and the situation at border, I feel like, is very often in the headlines. And so I wonder why maybe being at that place was important for that learning process.
Well, I think most of all, you know, in the past, we think we know what's going on, but until you actually travel to the border, and I was lucky enough to be on our first group last July, and that's when I really realized, wow, we don't really know exactly what's going on at the border. You can see what's in the news, but until you really take some time and really talk with the migrants, I think this time our experience was even deeper than last experience, just in that we were able, through some interpretation by our LET, to really find out why are people traveling to our southern border and why is it that they have to leave home? Why, you know, we think about that. I mean, here growing up in the Midwest in the beautiful area we have, why would we ever leave our home? But I think we in traveling to the border this time, we learned a lot more, and it was much deeper in that we learned that there are very valid reasons why people are coming to our country and seeking asylum. So I think until you really touch it, see it, hear it, feel it, the news broadcasts are not the same.
Arlette, how did you get involved in this trip to the southern border?
I got involved on this trip because I worked closely with Pat and the Immigration Task Force. So Pat and I are sort of the leaders of the Immigration Task Force, and she had mentioned the previous trip, and I couldn't make it to the first trip, and so Pat and I had been talking, and FSPA, through Pat, invited me to go, and so I was of course, very happy to go and be able to help. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the Coulee Region Immigration Task Force and kind of what that group is working to do?
Sure. So Immigration Task Force is I've been involved for about 3 years now, and we are trying to have community conversations out in the community. We've done it in the past. This year we are working on setting up dates. Also, the Immigration Task Force started with the People Fest. This will be our third year. It is on August 9th. Into working and making the community aware of all their cultures and really trying to make La Crosse a more welcoming community. But I think our vision and mission has to do a lot with pretty much educating the community on what immigration issues are, how we can help, and how we can be involved.
Why is this conversation about what's going on at the southern border and learning about these experiences, why is this important to communities here in the Coulee region?
I believe the importance comes, like Pat said, a lot of us know and think we know about what we hear over the news, what's happening, how is this happening, what are the journeys like, and all of the critical situations that the families coming through the border are going through. But not until you go and you can really come back and say, this is what we experienced and this is happening, because these journeys are way more difficult than we can imagine. And we were able to see that. I guess, why is it important? Because we bring the reality with personal experiences. And now we know what the families go through, how the asylum process really works. It's really not an easy process. And the same as for those families that are also just seeking to come to the U.S. for work because their families are here that may not be seeking asylum. So that's why it's important, because we can bring a true perspective of what's really happening out there.
Yeah, Sister Mary, I would kind of pose the same question to you of, you know, why you feel like this issue is important for, you know, communities like La Crosse, communities here in the Coulee region to be talking about.
I think for me, as far as my community is concerned, we have always have an interest in the people who need help, or who need a larger understanding of what's going on. And by our presence there at the border, I believe we have learned that it's not what we always hear on the radio or TV. So we need to find out for ourselves what difference we can make for them when they arrive at the border. So it's our personal attention.
Yeah. Pat, can you explain, going back to July, I mean, how did you coordinate this trip of going to the southern border?
Well, last July, it started with maybe in May, and just talking with our leadership, our sisters in leadership, with their interest in spending more time and energy on migration and immigration issues. And so I started out kind of looking at different places that you could actually volunteer. And if you recall, like last spring, it was just exploding at the border, and there were so many people coming over, and we were hearing that there was so much need for volunteers and such. So I started out just kind of looking at different places you could volunteer, but I ended up connecting with Catholic Charities USA and talking with them. They actually deployed us to Yuma, Arizona. And Yuma, Arizona, I was like, well, where is that exactly? You know. But then I realized, oh boy, that's way south and it's hot. And it was July. And true to form, it was 119 degrees. But besides that, it was interesting because we arrived there and we were working for about a week. And then all at once, they were closing up shop, and there wasn't going to be any more volunteer work there. So we traveled over to Tucson. We got involved with Casa Olitas, which is a wonderful center that works with migrants. And so that's kind of how it all unfolded. And then, you know, from there, every step is another step along the way. So you meet people, they say, have you experienced this? Are you aware of that? And then that's how you learn. And then that's how I connect up with so many different things that we were able to do in the last two trips, like go out into the desert with the Good Samaritans, like we went over into the Mexican border and we had an experience there. So what happens is you connect. You meet people, they give you an opportunity, and you say yes.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. We're talking with a group from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration about their recent trip to the U.S.-Mexico border. We're here with Pat Ruta, Justice Coordinator for FSPA, Sister Mary Arnaldison, and Vicki Kendall from FSPA, and Arlette Rodriguez-Miller from the Greater La Crosse Area Diversity Council. I want to talk more about some of those experiences in detail later, but, you know, Pat, I wonder if you could just briefly explain then how this second trip kind of began, or this iteration of the trip began.
Well, the second trip began because, again, I think the great investment of the Franciscan Sisters in the area of migration and immigration. And our leadership team, again, wanted us to experience more, volunteer more, find out if there are other opportunities that the Franciscan Sisters can be involved with. And so from there, I had contacts from last July. So I, of course, contacted the individuals. And then I wanted to go to Casa Elitas because I knew that that, again, is Catholic Charities in the Tucson area, and they run a really good operation. I think they do so much good work. And so that was like kind of the point place. And we have to start with, can you take volunteers? And this is the time frame and such. And then you work through some of the other logistics about, you know, where you're going to go and what you're going to do. But it sort of unfolds in a way. At times, I think you have to be really open when you do this because, like this particular time, someone told us about Operation Streamline, and I didn't know about that before, so that was another thing. Okay, well, I think we need to check that out. Or there's just different opportunities that arise once you're there if you start chatting with people and trying to find out, you know, it's kind of like a puzzle, I think, maybe. So,
yeah, I'm glad you brought up this topic because, you know, in hearing about your first trip and the shelter you were working at, it all of a sudden being closed. And I wonder if that changing situation that you experienced, what that reflects about the experience of, you know, immigrants coming across the border and trying to navigate some of these resources.
I mean, it's about that for sure, because nothing is, you know, like everybody that you would talk to would say, well, this is the way it is today. But, you know, whether it'll be like this tomorrow is a big question. For example, at Casa Elitas, when we first arrived this last, a couple weeks ago, it wasn't very busy. And then 2 days later, 39 migrants came in. So you see, what happens is it's always a moving target, basically, if you will. And so I think that must be true for the migrants too. The rules, things change. You have the language barrier. I mean, there's so many different issues. And then, of course, you know, what's happening with you know, our administration and some of the new rules that have come down the pike, you know, like the MPP, Migrant Protocol, Protection Protocol. I mean, there's so many different factors that are playing in here. So I think it's not easy, and it's not clearly laid out, and neither is a trip to the border and that volunteer experience.
Vicki, why did you want to participate in this trip to the border?
Well, I was in a meeting at work one day with Pat, and she was talking about that soon they were going to be going on a trip to Casa Elitas and Tucson. And later I talked with her, and I said, I would like to go to that just to learn more a little bit about it. It was an opportunity that I thought that I could learn, which I did. And it's so she said, I think that would work. Let's talk to some people. So we learned about that.
Yeah, I wonder, you mentioned an opportunity to learn. I wonder if there were preconceived ideas that you had going into that trip that maybe were challenged in your experience.
You know, I think not so much. I learned on the fact that I didn't know anything about it really that much. And going there, I've learned to appreciate more of my life, the way I live now, and just to see some of the families that are struggling and have went for a long journey to get to where they're at. So I've learned that way. It's helped me to learn that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sister Mary, I wonder maybe what you took away from your experience.
From my experience as a teacher, I was also sent to teach many, many years ago. I was in Yuma teaching. I was in an Indian reservation. I was in Tucson and whatever. And I was teaching school those years. And of course, with that, I was very inspired by the Hispanic people. And I just kind of joined them, what they were doing, learned their customs, but I also had to teach their children. So I was always hoping that I would give a good influence to them as to how to live the best they can and how happy they were. And so when I heard of all this about immigrants not being able to come over, I said, why not? They've been here for ages. Why stop them now? And so I just said, I want to go to see in what way I could help and to further my understanding of what's going on in the world. And I'm not happy with our president because I think he's very negative and he's not encouraging people to be people, to be lovable, to help others. So I think being there was a good lesson for me, that there's hope because there are many, many good people that are willing to sacrifice for the immigrants that are coming over.
When did you previously teach in Yuma? You mentioned you were there before.
Way back in 1960 and 70.
How were things different there between those times?
I cannot tell you how different they are because I haven't lived there just for those 2 weeks, you know, going back and forth.
Right.
But I always felt that they were very open to whatever we suggested, me as a teacher to them. And I was just very happy to be with them because they were open, they were good people, they were willing to sacrifice, they were willing to learn, willing to adapt to all situations. And they're just wonderful people. So I said, why are we not allowing them to come over?
Pat, I wonder how things changed, if you noticed changes, even between your trip in July and a trip in January this year.
Honestly, I did. I mean, because what I noticed was, first of all, because of the enactment of the MPP, migration, there were different people who were actually accessing the southern border. Like when we were there in July, when you kind of just did a look at who was coming, it was more the indigenous population from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador. And this time, what we really saw was really a lot different. There were people from Venezuela, Cuba, India, Mexico. So that also brings to mind, okay, so maybe some of the people who were seeking asylum before are not even being cleared to cross the border at all. You know, so there was a difference in what populations were actually at the shelters. Now, that's just one little snapshot in one little area on that great big border, but I think that might bear out because we also did a little visit with the Border Patrol, and they sort of said the same thing when we were having our conversation with them, like who's coming across the border and what are you seeing and those type of things. And I recall the one agent that we were talking with was talking about some of the an Indian family who got lost in the desert and just how, you know, hard that was to see and such. So I think we're seeing maybe different people accessing that southern border at this time compared to what it was even last July.
That's Pat Ruta, Justice Coordinator for the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, here with us today to talk about her experience working with immigrants at the U.S.-Mexico border. She's joined by Sister Mary Arnaldison and Vicki Kendall from FSPA and Arlette Rodriguez-Miller from the Greater La Crosse Area Diversity Council and the Coulee Region Immigration Task Force. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Arlette, this is really interesting, the comment that Pat made about who is accessing the border. And I wonder what your thoughts are on how maybe the people that are seeking asylum or looking to immigrate across the border are maybe different than what people would assume.
Yes. So we were surprised to hear that other nations besides Central America and South America are coming to Mexico to be able to cross the border because they don't have a visa, so they don't have the possibility to fly into the United States. So that was a surprise. I think I had heard about it, but not so closely. And then there's more families than we know that are trying to cross the border, whether it's for asylum or crossing through the desert. So also other families that we were able to interact with from Cuba and from all the way to Venezuela. And the journey they do to make it to Mexico I don't see it possible. If you would have had told me, and I didn't talk to these families, so when you cross that Colombian border with Panama, which is a jungle, and there's a mountain, the Darien Mountain, that is considered the mountain of death. This is how Venezuelans are crossing into Panama. Now, there are other families that have the possibility to go through Mexico, and how do they do it? They get a traveling visa, or Venezuelans are allowed into Mexico as a, travelers, and they have to show one, a credit card or a couple credit cards with access to dollars, and then also a bank account to be able to come as tourists. And what happens is, well, some of them have that possibility, and then they start taking a bus and go all the way to the border. So that's also, that was new to me. And also the journey, again, it is almost impossible to cross the jungle. That's the reason why there's no roads to cross from Colombia to Panama. And the journey that they have to do through South America and all of the threats they have to go through with the mafia and the cartels. And people are kidnapped. They are raped. They are taking all of their belongings, all of their money. And so I think that more than we know, obviously, it's happening, and the way they make it to Mexico, it's really heartbreaking and horrifying.
Arla, do you have a sense of how many of the people you were talking with had taken a trip and were in the country as undocumented immigrants, and how many people were able to access more traditional like asylum or immigration channels?
Well, what happens is that a lot of the families that we were able to connect with are Casa Elitas, and the people that come to Casa Elitas are people seeking asylum. But there are families that are simply seeking work, and they want to meet with families and friends. And some of them also come through Casa Elitas, but then depending on their situation, they apply for a different kind of visa or residency in the U.S., whether it's because of some certain violence they're going through, they may apply to asylum as well, or they may go through a different process, just applying to get a residency and hopefully able to work in the country.
Vicky, I wonder if you had any experiences talking with people, hearing about some of these journeys that Arlette is talking about, of just really, really challenging conditions.
Arlette was the one that could speak Spanish, so she spoke, she was interpreter, she did a good job with that. And she would relay to us some of the stories that we helped a couple ladies that were there, and just to help, we kind of connected with them, and some of the children we connected with, so the stories that they were able to tell us were, like Arlette said, very, very heartbreaking, and their journey to get here, and then maybe they, when they get here, their husband goes into jail, right?
Detention,
so they're separated. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the story of what we went through.
Yeah, Pat, I mean, I imagine that's challenging to connect with people when there is potentially a language barrier or, other barriers that might kind of hinder that.
Well, I don't speak Spanish, only very little, but for some, I think, especially for the children and really the women that we were encountering too, it seems like they were so grateful for anything that we would do, the time we spent with them, and that that caring and love that you can maybe emit through smiling at them and that contact and hugging them. They were very open to that. I think sometimes, you know, maybe there is that break in language, but people still know if you are genuine and if you really care and you're really welcoming them into our country. And I saw that with the volunteers at Casa Elitas. A lot of the volunteers that work there, for example, one of the physicians, just a beautiful woman, retired now, but she spends many days at Casa Elitas, and as people come in, she gives them the checkup, checking to see if they, you know, if they have any transmittable diseases, things like that. And what I watched with her is when she was communicating with one of the women who was pregnant, and she can't really, they, you know, she's trying to give her this. It was nausea medication. But the thing was, the girl kind of looked at it like it was candy, you know, and it was sort of cute. But then she kept saying nausea, nausea, and pretty soon then they were communicating. And I think the care, concern, I guess love that we would give to them, they received very readily. So, and I saw that with the physician and the young woman who was pregnant, and I saw that with the children. They want a hug, you know. And that transcends everything, actually, even though I can only say, hola, ¿cómo está? You know, it's just, we did some fun little things, too. We would count in Spanish, and then we would count in English, you know. So we were connecting in those different ways. But
Pat Ruda, Vicki Kendall, and Sister Mary Arnaldison from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration are here with us today to talk about two recent trips the FSPA led to the U.S.-Mexico border. They're joined by Arlette Rodriguez-Miller from the Greater La Crosse Area Diversity Council and the chair of the Coulee Region Immigration Task Force. Coming up, we'll continue to hear stories from the southern border. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking with a group from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration in La Crosse, who recently returned from a trip to the U.S.-Mexico border. It's the second time a group has traveled to the southern border to provide aid to immigrants there. Joining us to talk about their experience and how it influences their work here in La Crosse are Pat Ruda, Justice Coordinator for the FSPA, Sister Mary Arnaldison from the FSPA Sister Services Department, Vicki Kendall, FSPA's Director of Housekeeping, and Arlette Rodriguez-Miller, Executive Director of the Greater La Crosse Area Diversity Council and Chair of the Coulee Region Immigration Task Force. Sister Mary, I wonder if you can share a little bit more about just what work you guys were doing during your time in Arizona.
I was helping to sort out clothing. It came from all areas, from different branches, all form of clothing from little up to adulthood. And so it just gave me a presence of people really care. We have so much clothing there that we had to send it out to other homeless places. So we're not only helping the immigrants, but we're helping the poor of the area itself. So that was very good. But just to be with the children and see children will be children. That was a nice way of saying it, or being with them. They knew what they wanted, and they kind of smuggled up to you, and you know, with their eyes wide open and smile, and you couldn't help but not love them. And their parents was always sitting in the back, but they noticed what was happening. And you could tell even when the children played together, they always kind of, what should we do, you know? Should we sneak up on it, or should we do this or that? So that was good. I think It was a good experience all the way through. It brought me back to me many times when I was there before, when they were free and could go where they wanted to go. And it just opened my heart to them. And I just wish that more people would be open to have more freedom within the United States.
Vicki, I wonder if you can share a little bit about kind of what the conditions are for migrants, for immigrants coming across the U.S.-Mexico border.
I might not be the best to answer this, Pat might be better, but I know I know their travel is very, you know, very long and hot, and they go through a lot to get to where they want to get to, and hopefully they can have a sponsor, which is huge for them, and make their life better for their family.
Yeah, Pat, I wonder if you can share, you know, once people are able to cross the border, kind of what conditions are like.
What I want to do is just take a little step before that, and that was this time we were able to travel across the border. We had someone who was knowledgeable about where to go in Nogales, Mexico, and that really struck me because the conditions in that city are they're something else, you know. And then we went to a couple of different shelters, one new one that's being built because there's so much need on the Mexican side. But one of the other shelters that we visited, we had to climb up this huge hill with these kind of rickety steps. And we got to the top, and then the conditions were really not anything that we're used to here in the U.S., I guess is what I would say. And as you looked out over the area, you were looking at what we were told was a cartel house, and that the children weren't even allowed to play on the street. It was too dangerous. And so the conditions were really, I mean, that was very hard and emotional to really see those poor children who have traveled, some of them, such a great distance already, and then they were waiting to be able to try to cross the border. Once they crossed the border, the other thing that really, one of the really hard things, I was watching Arlette talk with this cute little girl, and she, for some reason, that little girl, all of us kind of fell in love with her. She's a little 4-year-old, but she was so smart and so cute, and you know, you just couldn't help but be drawn to her. And Arlette was asking her a question about does she have a backpack, and she told Arlette, the bad man took my backpack, and it was a Mickey Mouse backpack. And so it was just like, oh, no, I can't even believe that we heard that. But most of the people, when they come to Casalitas, they have nothing but the clothes on their back. That's it. And it's just almost, it's hard for us to even understand that where you could leave the country where you grew up and all the people you love, and then come across, and then all you really have are the clothes that are on, that you're wearing. And the children, too. It's very hard to think about a little 4-year-old girl having her backpack taken by the bad man. So those are the emotional stories that we heard, and hard to hear that. So I guess those are experiences that, yes, we've heard horrific things on the news, and you know, many people were up in rage about what was on the news. But I think the Border Patrol agents and the people who have worked at these centers say, yes, all of that's true, and it's even worse. That's what I would say.
Yeah, you know, Arlette, it sounds like there's just a great need for, you know, resources, aid for people who are, you know, coming across the border, even just places to stay.
Yes, so going back again to the border in Mexico, so the one shelter that we visited that is up and running, like Pat said, just to go up, you know, these stairs are, but it seemed pretty dangerous to go up. And then from there, you can see the wall is right in front of this shelter. But they have capacity for 150 people. And do you know, they have three rooms, 17 by 14 each, two rooms are almost the same building, but they have a bathroom in between and the other one. And just to think, we all walked in there and we couldn't help but to get emotional. I mean, we literally had to walk away from each other, because if we did have a piece of conversation of what we were seeing, we would have just broken down and we were in tears. The conditions are deplorable. I mean, and I'm not saying this is the best they have, okay? The conditions I mean by space, because they are doing a great job, the people that are in charge of the shelter and helping. But when you have to sleep so close to another person in a place that is cold, they do have blankets. There's no heating in these buildings. And just knowing what they were telling us, they said, particularly in this shelter, they have not yet had any encounters with the cartel. But what happens is that they come into the shelters and will take whoever they feel like and kidnap them. And they will not have, like Pat said, any access to the streets. The kids cannot play because they control the towns, not just Nogales where we were at, but others. And so this new shelter that Pat was speaking of is being built, and hopefully it will help this, because a lot of the families that don't stay at the shelter because there's no capacity, they have to work for 1, 2, or 3 months until their name comes up on the list to cross the port of entry through, you know, they have to, like I said, put them their names on the list. So in the meanwhile, because they can't stay at the shelter, what they do is they work merely to pay for a roof and board, so, you know, a roof and food every day, and they still cross without a penny, but they are able to live, particularly in this case in Nogales, until they can cross the border.
Pat, I also want to ask about the experience you had, I believe in the first trip of traveling into the desert with a group to provide water along known migrant trails. I wonder if you can speak a little bit about that experience.
That experience, the first time in July when we were there, it was particularly hot. I mentioned it was 119 in the desert. And we were given the opportunity to travel with the Green Valley Samaritans, and they do just a wonderful job in that they take water out to the migrants in the Sonoran Desert, and they also have their vehicle packed with food items and medical supplies and things like that. And so that first trip, they invited us to, would you like to see what this is like? And of course, we really wanted to do that. And then I stayed in touch with the Good Samaritans all through the winter. And then when we decided we were going to take another trip, I reached out to them, and we took the trip again. This time, it was cooler in the desert, I must add. But our experience also was very powerful in that what we see are the different places where people, migrants, have lost their lives. Sometimes they were right by the road, and then for whatever reason, they die on site there. And the thing that I knew from before, and again, there's an artist in the Tucson area that has made this kind of his life's mission now. And when they find remains of a migrant anywhere in the desert there, what he does is he makes a cross, and then they plant that cross where these remains have been found. And it's a way to honor the migrants who lost their lives. And they have a little ritual that you kind of do every time you come across one of the crosses, and we did that, and I think that's very powerful in reminding all of us of the lives that have been lost trying to find a better life, because that's basically what we keep hearing over and over again, that people don't leave their home without a lot of thought and such, and that they just simply need to find a better life for themselves or their children.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. We're talking with a group from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration about their recent trip to the U.S.-Mexico border. We're here with Pat Ruda, Vicki Kendall, and Sister Mary Arnaldison from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, and Arlette Rodriguez-Miller from the Greater La Crosse Area Diversity Council. Pat, I also wanted to ask about your experience meeting with some people from Customs and Border Protection while you were in Arizona. I wonder if you could speak a little bit about how that meeting even came about and what that experience was like.
Well, the first time that when we were in Yuma, Arizona, we decided, and I was traveling with three of the Franciscan sisters, and we decided that we would just go to the Border Patrol and we would go unannounced and we would just say, hey, we would like to learn more about what you do here at the border. And when we were in Yuma, Arizona, they welcomed us in, and we spent like 2.5 hours just talking about what does it take to be a Border Patrol, what's the feeling of the general public these days toward Border Patrol and such. But this last experience was a little bit different because we were in the Tucson sector now. And unbeknownst to me, we decided to go to the Border Patrol again, unannounced. But this time it's on an Air Force base. And so we kind of come into the gate and then we're like stopped. And then, okay, let's see, what's going on here, you know? Well, anyway, then we try to say, look, we would like to have a meeting with the Border Patrol. Well, as it turns out, one of their public affairs agents did come out and did meet with us and really talked with us, and he explained that the reason why you can't allow us in because you're on an Air Force base. And I said, oh, that's a little different than what it was in Yuma, Arizona. And he said, yes, it is a little different. So from that perspective, it was a different experience. The agent that we spoke with was really pretty nice guy, I think, and actually answered our questions. I think we gathered as much information as what we could. But, I mean, the thing we've learned, too, also as we were out in the desert with the Good Samaritans, they always stop and chat with the Border Patrol. Sometimes the Border Patrol agents want to engage in a conversation, and other times they're a little bit more like, well, you know, okay, hello, and, you know, you need to be on your way. But most of the people that we encountered were pretty friendly. It's a tough job. I mean, they're patrolling in a really rough terrain. I mean, you're talking desert, and I would think, you know, a lot of those agents are there in their vehicle, and they're just looking for migrants coming across, people, and, you know, they tell us their job is to apprehend at the border if there are people illegally entering the country. And so, you know, they are doing their job. They are sworn officers. They're, you know, so I think, you know, there's been quite a bit of controversy about them. And again, I don't think that's right. I think they are there to do their job, and that's what they do, you know. And my experience most of the time has been they were there to answer questions if we had them.
Arla, what was your take on that discussion?
Yeah, so this may be coincidental, but a couple of people before I went and a couple of people that we met there had expressed how it goes also in the family, like Border Patrol had family members that were part of Border Patrol, and it seemed to be something that happens often. I don't know how often, but that was kind of new for me because I felt that the two people that we talked to, in particular the two Border Patrol officers that we talked to, were friendly. They were nice. That one of them, the one that we encountered at the desert at first, was kind of quiet until he kind of knew what we were doing in the desert. I feel that some of the stories that you hear, or that in particular I heard while I was at Casa Alita, sometimes they could be a little tough or rough with the males that are crossing with their families. I think that may be part of their job. But also, you know, you have some that are more humanitarian and are more open to this kind of job. Others may not be in touch with their human side while they're doing this work. But, you know, that comes with, I guess, the territory, and that comes with different types of people. So you could hear stories from, you know, they were very nice and polite to they were not very caring. But then, you know, everybody has a different perception, especially when you are an immigrant and those kind of feelings are going through. But, yeah, so we asked them a lot of questions. And to be honest, I thought that they are really touched, their lives are really also touched by what happens, especially when they know families and they find children that have passed through the desert. And one officer in particular, his face was, what would be a good word? You could tell his face, his jaw was shaking when he told us about these children that they were found from these families that got lost, and the children just died. And so they are human, and they are touched, and they have a very difficult job.
Vicki, what did you bring back from this trip? And how do you think that maybe has influenced the way that, I don't know, that you're thinking about our community here in La Crosse and, you know, the immigrants that we have as part of our community?
I mean, what I think I took away from this is they need to be treated as humans. I don't think they're treated fairly. I think I feel more appreciative of what I have because I've seen what they don't have. What was the other part of that?
Yeah, just how you feel like your experience kind of influences the way that you think, you know, La Crosse should respond to our immigrant community here.
I mean, my experience is to teach people, I mean, to help people maybe understand it. I'm still learning about it, but to help people understand my part, what I went through, and Pat and I and Mary, we're going to do a lunch and learn at St. Rose Convent to speak about it for the staff at St. Rose. So that's important to get the word out and have people maybe understand it or learn a little more about it.
Yeah, Pat, how do you think, you know, building these relationships at the southern border is going to influence the work of the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration here in La Crosse?
Well, I believe that the sisters will be even more committed, even more, if that's possible, than they have been, just because so many of the sisters did serve around the world, you know, in missionary positions or some of the other things that they've done. And I think when we bring back, like I've had lots of our sisters say, are you going to give a presentation? Are you going to tell us what you learned this time? That they'll be even more committed to these causes, and then that will help us continue to do our work, especially our immigration task force. We really want to, this year, look at how to make our region a more welcoming community. And there might be some other opportunities that we'll have, or also there's the other possibilities of other churches or organizations here in our area actually being sponsors for migrants coming across the border. It's a lot easier to sponsor than I ever thought it was. I mean, I heard from the immigration attorneys that we were talking with. I heard from Casalitas, which is, of course, the center that we were working at, that it's fairly easy to be a sponsor for someone. You know, you have to be a U.S. citizen, you have to show that you have a means of support, but you can sign that paper and the U.S. government is pretty fine with that. So there might be some other opportunities for people in our area if they have a heart and the want to do this. And we didn't know about that before. You know, we were unsure about how you do that, so.
Yeah, Arlette, I that's really interesting. I wonder what takeaways you have for people who, you know, in hearing this conversation or hearing about this trip, you know, maybe want to implement some of these lessons in our community. Like, what could people do?
Yes. Again, we thought that the sponsorship process or becoming a sponsor would be something that would require for you to host that family at your home. But sponsors simply fill out the paperwork and are, you know, sponsoring the family, and then they can find another place to live. Or you could, if you are in a community that is supportive of what you're doing, for example, I could be a sponsor, anyone could be a sponsor, and then, you know, I could reach out to FSBA, to churches, and to kind of make the community to help with their room and board and to help them succeed in searching for their asylum. And it doesn't just necessarily have to be, you don't want to call it a burden, is what I'm trying to say. It can be really easy to do it, and then you just kind of get a support community to help you through that. So what I think is important for the La Crosse community to know is that we could possibly be helping families, you know, from India, from Venezuela, from Cuba, from Central America, from Congo, from, I mean, just from anywhere, and in helping that sponsorship, also helping the programs that we could possibly do in the border, because we want to continue. We want to make it a continuation to this trip and help, whether it's at Casa Alitas, at the new shelters that are at the border. And so we want to call awareness in the La Crosse area and the La Crosse communities so that they know that there's something we can do and support.
Arlette Rodriguez-Miller, Executive Director of the Greater La Crosse Area Diversity Council. Pat Ruda, Justice Coordinator for the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. Sister Mary Arnaldison from the FSPA Sister Services Department. And Vicki Kendall, FSPA's Director of Housekeeping. Joined us to talk about their recent trip to the U.S.-Mexico border and what lessons the residents from the Coulee region can take away from their trip. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Our show is produced by Senior News Editor and Producer John Davis. If you missed part of today's program, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.